Okay, I'm going to begin. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us again tonight for the third part of our three-part series on the minor characters from Mikylas Rus. And today we are going to focus on Orpah. We've already spent some time learning about Elimelech, Machlon, and Kilion, and then we had a shiur about Naomi. And now I would like to discuss Orpah. Now, Orpah, you might say, what am I going to talk about for an hour? She only really has one pasuk, so that's a really great question. But let's see what we can come up with when it comes to Orpah. Now, normally, if one would say Orpah to somebody, they would say to me, wow, that's a really negative character. That's somebody who we're supposed to not like. It's someone that we're supposed to be critical of. How dare she leave Naomi behind? Why didn't she act like Rus? What's her problem? But I would like to, in this year, reconsider this idea. I don't know what just happened. Did somebody share a screen? Yes. Okay. If whoever is sharing screen can unshare that, but I'm going to keep going with my share, but I'd really appreciate that very much. I don't know how to unshare her screen. Okay, there we go. So the question that I want to reconsider in our share tonight is, was Orpah really as evil as we think? And what is it that she did that's so wrong that we all look at her as a negative character? So let's start by analyzing what actually did she do. Starting with source number one, really the only thing we know about Orpah is the following fact. Naomi has two daughter-in-laws and she is telling them to please leave and Orpah leaves. Vatesanu kolam vatibchana od, they start crying and they're kissing. Vatishak Orpah lachamuta, she kisses her mother-in-law goodbye. Now, this is an evil character. I would think she would spit in her mother-in-law's face. She would smack her. She would say rude comments to her on her way out. She kisses her goodbye and she goes home. In fact, as we pointed out last week, the next pasuk I gave you on the source sheet, Naomi asked her to leave. She said, please, lechna, shovna isha lebetima, please go home. So here comes Orpah, following the directions of her mother-in-law, gives her a kiss on the cheek, says goodbye, and goes home. If I look at these psukim, I don't see somebody evil at all. I actually see a very normal and possibly even a very nice person. Now, this phenomenon of taking someone who looks pretty good in the text and making them or assuming that they are a negative character is also something that I found happens in Megillas Esther as well. Last year that we went, that we were at last week when I was speaking, I showed you how Naomi and the Mordechai character are very similar, how the Esther and the Rus character are very similar. So today it kind of makes sense that if I'm going to do Orpah, I'm also going to compare her to someone from Megillas Esther as well, which is the Vashti. If you think about it, we are all taught Vashti is evil. Not only are we taught she's evil, our children come home with figurines of Vashti, with dots and tails, and certainly a very nasty, nasty type of person that we are taught that she is. But let's look at her psukim as well. If you look at source number two, we also start to question how evil is Vashti. Source number two, Vigam Vashti Hamalka Stamishten Hashim. Ooh, she makes a party for the women. Doesn't sound so bad. Why should they be left out? Ahasuerus is inviting all the men to the party, so Vashti then decides to equal things out. Then Ahasuerus tells her to come, laharot hamim v'sarim es yafya, show off her beauty to all of his guests, and pasuk yudbet, here's the big action of Vashti, v'timain hamalka Vashti lavo. She doesn't want to go. Now, if I look at the psukim, I would say, wow, let's praise Vashti. Let's applaud Vashti. Why should you be a spectacle at the party of the king? Why is it okay for you to go and show off your beauty in front of everyone? It's amazing. The Vashti stands up to Ahasuerus and says, I don't want to come to your party. Not only that, if you look also in source two, I gave you a Gemara Megillah, where there's a discussion in the Gemara about why were the Jewish people, the time of Purim, punished so badly that we almost got killed. And there's a number of answers, but the Talmidim of Rav Shimon ben Yochai give the suggestion where I bolted, Amru lo mipnei shenehenu misuda social otar rasha, because they were part of the party of Ahasuerus. So for rebuking the Jews for going to the party, why aren't we celebrating Vashti who refuses to go to the party. You'd think that that would be a wonderful thing that she does. So I really take a step back and I don't understand, why do we think Orpah and Vashti are so evil? Why are these characters that we normally look at in a very negative light? And the answer is very simple. We're very biased because Chazal biases us by Chazal giving us the portrayal of these characters as someone who's very negative. If you look at source three, going back to Orpah, we read this last time, but then I'm going to add to it. Chazal clearly show Orpah in a negative light. Why is her name Orpah? Shehachva Oref Chamuta. She turned her neck. She turned her back on her mother-in-law. She did something negative, as opposed to Rus. Shera'ata b'divrei Chamuta. Rus knew what her mother-in-law really wanted. Her mother-in-law wanted her to stay. Rus did the right thing. Orpah did the wrong thing. But if you look at the next Medrash, Medrash Zuta on Megillas Rus, it gets even nastier towards Orpah. Why is her name Orpah? Shehayala la'oref ke'egla arufa. It compares her to the halachic sugya, the neck, turning her neck like the egla arufa. The egla arufa is a discussion that we have about a dead body that's found in between two cities, and nobody knows who's responsible for it, and therefore each city has to give an egla arufa. It's about negligence. It's about taking accountability. It's about abandoning this person and this dead body, and therefore we have to take some responsibility. To some extent, it's saying Orpah abandoned her mother-in-law. She was negligent of her duties of what she was supposed to do, as opposed to second half of the Medrash, v'shem ha'shenit Ruth, she'ita martechet atzma min ha'aveira, la'atzot ritzon avi ha'shash b'shamayim. She not only did what Naomi wanted her to do, she did what God in heaven wanted her to do. Rus is the positive one who does all the right things. And Orpah, of course, is the negligent, the terrible one who abandons her mother-in-law. But let's take this even further, because we can apply this same idea to Vashti as well. Chazal, who clearly see Vashti in a very negative light. And I'll give you one really great example. In source number four, the Gemara in Megillah, when we're looking at Vashti, which we said before, her saying no to the king could have been looked at in a positive light. The fact that she made a party for the women could have been looked at as how nice she's making a party for the women. Look how the Gemara understands these stories. The Gemara Megillah says, "Begam Vashti Hamalka Asta Mishteh Nashim Beit Malchut." Why does the pasuk tell me, says the Gemara, that she made this party in the palace? Beit Nashim Mibayle. Why didn't she make it in like her own house, in the women's house? Like, why did she do it in the palace? Amar Rava Shnehem L'dvar Aver Nitkavnu. Don't think Vashti's so righteous. Vashti intended to do this terrible aveira, this terrible act that Ahasuerus was telling her to do. She intended to go out in front of all the men. So then says the Gemara, why doesn't she? Vatimaina Malka Vashti. Vashti says no. Why would she refuse to come? We just said she's immoral. She's promiscuous. Why would she not come? If of course she intended to go, why did she not go? Amar of Yosi Bar Chanina Malamecha Parcha Batzaras Matznisan Tana Bagavriel Vasala Zanav, and therefore the Gemara comes to two conclusions: she all of a sudden got sarash, got leprosy, or she grew a tail. What's the Gemara trying to tell us? She didn't come for superficial reasons. She didn't come for her own sake, for her own embarrassment. But had those things not happened to her, would she have shown up to that party? Of course she did. She's an immoral person. She's a promiscuous person. She would have loved to have had the opportunity to show off her beauty to everybody. It's not for the right reasons that Vashti decides not to go. Comes a fascinating medrash in the Panim Acherot, who asked the question, why did God do this to Vashti? Meaning in that moment, why did God all of a sudden make it that something happened to Vashti's body, whether these things or something else happened to her that occurred that made her not want to go out? Says the medrash, Lama Sala Kadosh Baruch Hu Kach, why did Hashem do this to her? Bishvil Shelo Hanichala Ahasuerus Litein Reshus L'Benot Beit HaMikdash. We blame Vashti for being the one who prevented Ahasuerus from letting us build the Beit HaMikdash. According to Chazal, Vashti is this ultimate, terrible, terrible person. She hated the Jewish people. She didn't want us to build the Beit HaMikdash. So God punished her. And of course she wasn't righteous by not going to the party. It was selfish. It was all superficial. Don't look at Vashti in a positive way at all. Or I can look at it in a little bit more of a pshat way. If you look at source number five, the Rikra Perish on the Megillah writes as follows. Why does she not show up? Because she was insulted. She was insulted by who the king sent to pick her up. He sent Biyat HaSrisim, the eunuchs. This is like a lower level type servant, right? Mechal she'im haya sholech sarim rabim v'nichbadim me'ela haitaba. She's like, how dare you send these lowly people to come get me? You should have sent more people and you should have sent more honorable officers to come pick me up. And he quotes a parallel, which I gave you in source five, in Bamidbar Chaf Bet, which is the story of Bilam and Balak, right? When Bilam says no to Balak the first time to come curse the Jewish people. Balak then goes and sends Sarim Rabim v'nechbadim me'elu. It's the same words, right? He comes to send him more honorable officers, thinking that the reason why Bilam said no was because he was like, not to these people. You didn't send me honorable enough people. And therefore comparing that to Vashti, Vashti saying, I'm insulted by who you sent to get me. And that was her reason for not coming. So we have to ask, clearly Chazal was very critical of Orpah. Chazal was very critical towards Vashti. And we have to ask why. Why is it that Chazal wanted to make them such evil figures when the pshat of the text doesn't make them as evil as Chazal does? And I think there's a very simple answer, which of course will be not simple by the time we finish this year. But I believe the simple approach to start with is the fact that they are what I like to call contrast characters to our main character. They are the opposite of our heroines. And therefore, in order to make our heroines look better, we make their contrast character look even worse. What do I mean by contrast character? So let's go back to our story, the story of Orpah. If I start off in Megillah, Megillah's Rus, Orpah and Rus are pretty equal. They kind of start from the same place. Look at the beginning pasuk in source number 6. There's Elimelech, and he has two sons, Mahlon and Kilion, and they marry both of them. They marry two women. And Orpah and Rus are being described here equally as two women from the nation of Moab. Shemachat Orpah, the Shemachat Rus. They're kind of the same. There's Orpah and they're Rus. They both marry brothers, and they're both married to these brothers for almost 10 years, and they both don't have any children. They both lose their husband at the same time, and they're both left with just their mother-in-law. When you start off the story, Rus and Orpah really seem to be on very equal footing. Chazal even makes it even stronger by the fact that Chazal make them sisters. If you look at Rus Rabba, still in source 6. Rus v'Orpah benotav shel Eglon Melech Moav hayu. They were princesses. They were the daughters of Eglon Melech Moav, meaning they're even sisters. So here we have very equal footing. But then in one pasuk, source number 1 back again, their paths divide, right? Orpah kisses her mother-in-law goodbye, and Rus davkaba, and Rus stays. So here we have two women that seem to be quite equal, and all of a sudden, in one decision, one goes this way and one goes that way. So again, if I want to make Rus amazing for staying, then I have to make Orpah evil and terrible for going. Let's take Vashti. Vashti and Esther also start off pretty similar. First of all, they're both described by their beauty. If you look at source 7, Vashti, why does he want to show her off to everyone? Because she's gorgeous, right? She's very, very beautiful. So to Esther, as we know, why is she chosen and taken to the king? Because this girl is Yifat Tovar v'Tovat Mareh. She's very, very beautiful. Both of them are beautiful, chosen by Ahasuerus. Marry Ahasuerus, become the queen, but then their stories divide and they act differently. Vashti is disobedient, right? Vashti says no to the king. Source 8, pasuk we've read already. Vatima ein hamaka Vashti. She says no when the king says to do something. And again, it focuses in the pasuk tevav, al asher lo astaz ma'amar hamelech. She didn't listen to the king. What is the one thing I know about Vashti? She's disobedient. And again, Chazal's going to play that into rude and disgusting, so much so that we're so scared the other wives are going to be disobedient to their own husbands. That's what she represents. What does Esther represent? The opposite. They seem to be opposite. Source number 9, Esther is obedient. Esther listens to everything that Mordechai tells her to do. Ki Mordechai tzivah l'esher lo tagid. Mordechai told her not to say her identity and who she is, so she doesn't say a word. Second, it repeats it in Pasuk Chaf, only a few psukim later. Kasher tzivah le Mordechai, that's ma'amar Mordechai Esther asa kasher hayta b'amnaito. She listens to Mordechai the same way she did when she lived with him. Esther, obedient. Vashti, disobedient. What else is something I know about Esther? She's kind. She's sweet. Says it numerous times. I'm still in source 9. Vatitavanara be'enav. Vatisachesa lefanav. She's nice to everyone. She's taken. She's like kidnapped out of her home. And she's nice to everyone around her. Lo bikshadav, our next pasuk that I gave you where I bolded. She doesn't ask for anything. She doesn't make a fuss. She doesn't do anything to cause problems. But he Esther no sechein b'nei korea. Everybody loved her because she was so kind. Even to the king, she's kind. Vayahava melechat Esther mikol anashim. Why does he love her more than everyone else? It doesn't say because she's the prettiest. It says, because she was nice to him. So here we have Esther, the obedient one and the nice one. So what happens? What do we make Vashti into to be the contrast character? The disobedient one. That's certainly in the psukim, but we're going to make her nasty. We're going to make her mean. In order to really bring out the good of Esther, we're going to bring out the opposite in her contrast character. And therefore, it's not a surprise that Chazal makes it or expands these differences between our character in such a drastic, drastic way. Let's go back to Orpah. So Orpah is the opposite of Rus, right? So in order to make her into this huge contrast to Rus, we're going to build a persona for her that is therefore going to be contrasted in the Midrash to the persona that's given to Rus. So let me show you what I mean. If you look at source number 10, I only gave you a few because some of them got really rated R about how Chazal believe happened to Orpah after our story. Orpah goes home. That's what the pasuk says. Well, there's an ending to her story, according to the Midrash, which is really not very sneeze at all. Let's put it that way. Source number 10, Kol Ota Halayla Shapirsha Orpah Mechamuta, the entire night, that night, she didn't even wait, that night that she left her mother-in-law, Nitarvuba Mea Aralot Chagoyim, she slept with 100 men. I don't know that's physically possible, but you see what Chazal is doing, drawing out this promiscuous, horrible, disgusting woman. The Zohar Chadash writes as follows, which again, all very graphic. She went home to become a prostitute. That's what she went home to do. And she tried to be one in the land of Moab, but nobody wanted her. Don't know why. So she had to go. She had to go all the way to the land of the Plishtim because she needed, you know, I guess she needed money. She needed a way to make a living now that she wasn't living with Naomi. And what happens when she goes to the land of Plishtim and becomes a prostitute there? She has six sons from the action that she's doing. And again, I left out some of the worst ones, so you can just imagine what they say about her. The Chazal is making her promiscuous to such a terrible, terrible degree. What does Chazal do to Rus? They make her the epitome of sneas, the opposite, right? If you look at source number 11, it's a famous midrash we all know about Rus, but now I think it makes sense because we're making total opposites. When the pasuk tells us that Boaz says, who is this girl, right? Who is this girl and why is she in my field? So the Gemara Shabbos asks the following question. Does Boaz go around asking about all the girls in his field? Like, who's this girl? Who is she? That's a very strange question. But rather, says the Gemara, it's because Rus stood out. So first it says because she was very wise, but second answer, Matsnisantana, Tavart Snias Rabba. She was unusual because she was so modest. She acted with so much snias. Omedet Muhumav and Ofela Mushav, the way she stood up, the way she kneeled down, right? She didn't bend over. She was extra, extra snias. You see the contrast coming up in Chazal. We're gonna make Orpah this promiscuous, horrible, anti-snias person, and we're gonna make Rus into this very, very snias and modest person. We do the same thing with Vashti and Esther. If you look at Vashti, the Midrashim of Vashti, we make her nasty. I mean, we know Esther is very sweet, very kind. I just read you those psukim. We make Vashti into someone who's so mean. She doesn't utter a word in our Megillah, but let's look at the Gemaras that we have about Vashti. Source number 2. The Gemara asks the following question. The language of the anger of Ahasuerush is doubled in the text. So they want to know, why is he so, so mad? Am I Dakabe Kulehai? What made him so mad? What did Vashti do that really made his, you know, made him boil so much? Amar Rava, so Rava says, Shachale, she sent him a message. It's what she said. Bar, and here's clearly supposed to be something very insulting. Bar Ahuryare Da'aba, you, talking to Ahasuerus, the stable boy of my father. Okay, that's pretty demeaning to the king, right? And then he says, and again, as a woman, I don't fully understand the insult here, but maybe the men on this Zoom understand it better. Aba lekalbel alfa chamra shasev larave, my dad could drink the amount of wine that 1,000 people could drink, and he didn't get drunk. Vahu gavra. And this guy, again, referring to the king, ishtate b'chamra, he's always drunk with wine. She insults him through his drinking. He's always a drunk, right? He can't hold his wine. That seems to be this terrible, terrible insult. Miyad b'chamato barabo, that got him so incredibly mad. What's the picture Chazal's giving Vashti? She's mean. She's cruel. She's nasty with her language. She talks to Ahasuerus in a very, very demeaning way. And she insults him. I mean, she's an insulting, mean person, which of course is the contrast to Esther. Yetzer, who's Nosei Chaim v'chassad lefanav, who's kind to everyone, never says a nasty word at all. But we see in Chazal another contrast, which I think is so fascinating, surrounding Shabbos. Look at source 13. The Gemara asks the following question: why specifically does it tell us in the Megillah that the story of Vashti happened by Yom HaShvi'i? Why does it matter? What do I care that it happened on Shabbos? Does it matter if she got killed on a Tuesday or if she got killed on a Wednesday? Why does it matter that she got killed on a Shabbos? So comes the Gemara Megillah to tell me it's Mita Keneged Mita. She deserved it because of something Vashti did on Shabbos. And this is a terrible story about Vashti. Shemimita Sha'adam Modeid Ba Modeidin Lo. God punishes people Mita Keneged Mita according to what they've done. Milamechai Ta Vashti Harisha. Ooh, we call her Rasha. She's evil. She's terrible. Mevia Benot Yisrael Umafshitana Arumot. She would take Jewish girls. She would strip them naked. Vosebahem Malacha B'Shabbos. And she would make them do Malacha. They'd make them do work on Shabbos. That's disgusting, right? Again, no evidence of the text for it, but she's punished on Shabbos. She must have done something very negative having to do with Shabbos. As opposed to, in that same Gemara, just another daf down, what we use in terms of Shabbos and Esther, right? Esther, it's the opposite. The Gemara asked, why is it that the Megillah points out that Esther has a Sheva Hanarot, that she had seven different maid servants helping her out? Says the Gemara Megillah, Amar Rava Shaitamo Nebe Mimea Shabbos, because she could therefore know which day was actually Shabbos, and she could keep Shabbos, right? So here we have the Esther, the Chazal saying, oh, it was so careful to keep Shabbos, and the Vashti, who went out of her way to make Jewish girls not keep Shabbos and demean them by making them be naked and work on Shabbos, an obvious Mida Keneged Mida for the assumption here that Ahasuerus told her to come out naked and dying as a result. So what seems very, very clear is that Chazal is trying to emphasize their differences, right? Esther and Rus, so positive. Rus, the epitome of tznius. Esther, the epitome of chesed and obedience and such a good person. And of course, therefore, Orpah is the promiscuous, anti-tznius person, and Vashti is the disobedient, nasty, disgusting person. But I'd like to expand this a little bit more to see where's Chazal coming from to do something like this. And I don't think it's just because Orpah and Vashti are the contrast to the characters within the Megillah itself, but they also contrast people from other stories in Tanakh. If you think about what Orpah did, she left behind Naomi to return back to the house of her father, leaving behind the chosen nation and the Jewish people to return to the land of Moab. Well, if I think about that, that's the opposite of a lot of stories I know of really amazing heroes. If you look at source 14, it's the opposite of Abraham, who is told, Lech lecha me'aretz chom v'lad chom beit avicha, leave your father's house behind and go towards the Eretz Yisrael to create the chosen nation. Orpah's going the opposite direction of Abraham. So to Rivka, who is told, if you want to go with the servant of Abraham to marry Yitzchak, you got to leave your father behind, you got to leave your brother behind, you got to leave your family behind. Vatomer, what does she say? Eilech, okay, I'll go. Again, the opposite of Orpah. Not only that, Rachel and Leah, right? When Yaakov says, we got to leave Lavan's house, are you ready to come with me? And they conclude, Ha'udlanu chelek v'nachal v'beit avinu, we got nothing left here. We're happy to go back with you into Eretz Yisrael. And this language that's used by Avram, by Rivka, by Rachel and Leah is used by Rus herself. Because when Boaz is describing the actions of Rus and how much he appreciates what she's done, look at the language he used. I'm still in source 14, the last pasuk quoted here. What did you do? V'ta'azvi avich v'imech. You left behind your father and your mother. V'eretz moladeteich. Reminding me of the pesukim of Abraham and your birthplace. V'talchil am asher lo yadata tamol shoshon. You went to the nation you didn't know about before. And therefore, God is going to pay you back and things are going to be good for you because of the action you've done. And therefore, if I'm going to say that the action of Rus resembles the actions of Avraham, of Rivka, of Rachel and Leah, then clearly Orpah not doing those actions would therefore look in a very negative way. But I'll take it even more. It's not just that Rus left behind her family. She went to go join the Jewish people. It's even more than that. If you look at source 15, it's clear that when Orpah went back, she didn't just go back to her land and her family. She went back to Elama v'El Eloheha, right? She went back to her nation. She went back to her God. She went back to her religion, as opposed to Rus, who says in the beautiful pasuk, Ameich ami v'elokayach elokai, your nation ami is now my nation, your God is my God. She chooses the Jewish nation when she sticks with Naomi. It's not just sticking with her mother-in-law, it's sticking with the Jewish people. And therefore, if Rus resembles to us Avraham, and Rivka and Rachel and Leah, that Orpah to some extent parallels for us the Lots, the Lavans, the Ishmaels, the Esavs, the people who get rejected, the people who don't become part of the chosen nation, the people who are left behind by the other characters. And therefore, if I'm going to compare Orpah to the Lot, the Lavan, the Ishmael, and the Esav, I understand why Chazal brings out in her such negativity. So too, when it comes to Vashti. You know, Vashti makes quite a fuss when she's summoned by the king, right? The very opposite of the personality of Esther. Now, Esther reminds me of other really great characters in Tanakh, and I'll give you one here in Source 16, the stories of Sarah. There are two times that the same language is used by Sarah and by Esther. Vatilakach isha beit paro, vayikach et Sarah, like vatilakach Esther al beit hamelech, vatilakach Esther al hamelech achashverosh. Right? Sarah gets taken by Paro, Sarah gets taken by Abimelech, and at the end of both of these stories of being taken, these women, some miraculous thing occurs that saves them, and the Jewish people get saved as well, or there is a bigger effect in the story of Sarah of spreading Shem Hashem to the world and the recognition of God. On the other hand, Vashti reminds me of another character, which is a very sad story because this is not a negative character, but in this story, she is quite negative. The woman who gets up, yells at the king in public and kind of makes, you know, a nasty type comment to them, which is captured by the Gemara, which is a story that I gave you here in Shmuel Bet, which is the story of Michal. Michal being one of the wives of David, the daughter of Shaul, who in the beginning is a very positive character, saves David's life. But the last story we hear about her is when David is celebrating, making a big party, which to some extent I am comparing Ahasuerus to David, but in very different ways. Ahasuerus celebrating not something positive, you know, just his own reign. David celebrating the fact that the Aron was now being brought to Ir David. It was a huge celebration. But here comes his wife, Michal. Batete Michal Batshal lekras David. She comes towards David, starts screaming at him, Manach Barayo Melch Yisrael, because David was dancing, and gives him rebuke in front of everyone at his own party. And of course, the result of that is David is not so happy with Michal. It ends up she has no children as a result of this, maybe a punishment to her, or just he's never with her again. He has other wives, but she certainly is punished from this point on not to be with her husband. So to Vashti, punished at the end of the story as well. This kind of this wife that comes out to scream at her husband in public at this party is kind of resembled here in this story. And therefore, just by looking at other stories that we have in Tanakh, I can see why we would say Orpah's the more negative character, and certainly Ruth and certainly Esther reminding us of heroes that we have throughout Tanakh. But it's fascinating to me because Chazal doesn't end there. Chazal keeps going because Chazal wants to make these characters really, really negative, the Orpah and the Vashti. And therefore, their ending of their story is also horrific. We have to make the ending of their stories as terrible as could be. So therefore, Orpah, who will pick up from where we left off, Orpah leaves Naomi. And when she leaves Naomi, it's terrible. She does these terrible, terrible things, whether she does in the land of Moab, she does land of Plishtim, I don't know. But she starts to act in this very promiscuous way. But it doesn't end there. Chazal does not end her story there. If you look at Source 17, you'll see it resembles a midrash that I read to you now a few times because it's just written in different ways in different places. But the Gemara in Sota writes as follows: when Orpah kisses her mother-in-law goodbye, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, Yavo b'nei ha-neshuka v'yiflu lefaneha b'nei ha-dvuka. This is not just going to affect this generation, Orpah and Rus. This is going to have long-term effects. The children of the one who kissed Naomi goodbye is going to fall in front of the one who stuck with Naomi. And you see in Chazal, the ending of Orpah is not Orpah. It's the children of Orpah that continue to have issues because of her. If you look at the Zohar Chadash, which I mentioned to you before, which said that she went to the land of Plishtim and had six children, well, look at the ending of that Medrash. The Kulam Neflu B'yad David. David kills all of her children. Shaya ben Benash al Rus. And we know David comes from Rus. That's the end of our Megillah, and we've discussed this, I think, in our first year, where David clearly comes from Rus. So here we have Orpah has a whole bunch of kids. David, who we know kills out all of the Plishtim, ends up killing Orpah's children. Wow, at the end, Rus and Orpah come back together, and Rus kills out Orpah's children. But let's take it even one step further. It's not just these random six children. There's another medrash, if you look at Source 18, which is a pasuk in Shmuel, and it's telling us about the giant Goliath. Goliath the giant. We all know the story, right? The one who comes and terrorizes the Jewish people. And it tells us when it's describing him, the end of the pasuk, v'gam hu yulad leharafa. He is also born to harafa, whatever that means. Comes along Chazal and says, harafa, Orpa, that sounds similar. Oh my goodness, maybe Goliath is the child of Orpa. Let me finish the medrash I started before, which is here in source 18, right? Amru otah halayla haruba me'aralo plishim, right? She slept around with 100 plishim. Be'yatsa mimenu Goliath hakiti haplishim. Who is born, who is conceived the day that she leaves Naomi behind? Goliath himself. And as I mentioned before, source 19, we see clearly in the Megillah that David comes from Boaz, who comes from this entire story. Boaz and Rus, who has a child, Oved, who is, at least here, his child is Yishai, and then David leads us straight to David. And of course, in source 19, the famous story of Goliath's encounter with David himself, right? David, who's a young child, not invited out to the battlefield, bringing food to his brother. So he's too young to even be a soldier, and looks at Goliath the giant, who's saying, oh, I'm going to kill anyone who tries to fight me. And everyone's too scared to fight. And David's like, I'm not scared to fight. He volunteers. Shelfer says no. David volunteers again, probably makes up a story that he killed a lion and a bear so that Shaul will let him fight. Shaul gives him armor. He didn't work for him, was too big, takes it off, and of course encounters Goliath. And if you look at the encounter of Goliath and David, you see the opposite values that are in both of them. Just like we're saying opposites, Orpah and Rus, opposites Goliath and David. David famously says to Goliath one of my favorite lines, which is, you know, in the beginning, Pasuk Mem Bet, where I bolded, Goliath sees him, he's such a child, he starts making fun of him, he berates him, and then David says so beautifully in Pasuk Mem Hey, Ataba Eli Becher Bechanit, you're coming at me with weapons. Weapons are not going to help you. You think your strength and your huge size and everything you have is going to help you. Vanochi Ba'elecha B'Shem Hashem Tzvakot. I come with God, so I'm okay. I'm going to win this battle. And of course, in the Pesukim Pasuk Nun, David overpowers the plishi, shoots him in the head with a rock. He falls over. David cuts off his head. The ending of the Orpah story is the child that is born to Orpah, the night that she leaves Naomi, is murdered publicly by David himself. It's a crazy, fascinating ending to the story and the contrast of Rus and Orpah that we find in Chazal. How about Vashti? So Vashti, we all know, oh, what happens to Vashti besides the fact that she's clearly demoted? Chazal has this assumption that she is killed. She is murdered on that day. So she doesn't, the ending of her story is that story, but it's such a terrible, horrible end that the woman is murdered. If you look at source number 20 with me, I think the language is really interesting because when they're speaking to the king and they're trying to figure out what to do with Vashti, Malchuta yitain hamelch ru'uta hatova mimenu. Don't worry, you'll give over her position to someone, her friend, who is better than her. And of course, who gets chosen? The person who is better than her, the person who replaces her, the opposite of her, the woman who's Vatisa Chen V'Chesed. That's the one, Vaim Lecheha Tachas Vashti. She replaces Vashti. As if Vashti didn't exist anymore. She takes over Vashti. And I thought that language was so interesting. I'm still in source 20 because the pasuk that I quoted you here in Shmuel Aleph, it's the same language that's used when David replaces Shaul. When Shaul is told he's no longer going to be king, your kingdom is going to be given to your friend that is better than you. It's the same language referring to David HaMelech himself. So here we have Esther, who has the opposite end. She becomes the queen. She gets to live, first of all. But besides that, she gets offered half of the kingdom, which Vashti never had. She gets promoted in such an amazing way. She's given the house of Haman and, of course, helps to save the Jewish people. The ending of Esther is the opposite of Vashti. But now I have to stop myself because, okay, I understand everything the Chazal did, the contrast between the two. But then I have to stop and just say, is this really true, though? Are they really villains? And the honest truth is I have to give credit when I really started to ask this question was because of my youngest child, who was 3 at the time. And we were at our Purim Seudah in our home, and she was giving over the Megillah story. And when she gave over the Megillah story, she's very creative, if anybody knows her. And there's a bunch of family members on there, so this will make a lot of sense. She decided that the ending of the Purim story was that Esther and Vashti became friends, and together they captured Ahasuerus, and they, in her mind, drove away with him in the trunk. I'm not sure where that came from, but the ending of her story was that Vashti and Esther became friends, and they were all good at the end. And of course, Ahasuerus was the bad one, who they both got rid of. But it started me thinking, which is, what a beautiful idea, and how come she didn't think Vashti was negative? And maybe do we all have to think that Vashti is such a negative character? And I think it even more so every single time I read McGillis Roast. There's really nothing negative about ORPA. There's no reason within the pshat, the simple explanation of the text, to look at ORPA in a negative way. So I want to look at it again. I mean, and I even started to question it further when I started looking at the text a little closer, and let me show you why. If you look at source 21, I'm back to ORPA. Something very strange happens in the pasuk where we are introduced to Rus and ORPA. It says, and I read you this pasuk already, Shem ha'chad ORPA v'shem ha'sheni Rus. And all of a sudden I questioned to myself, why is ORPA's name being mentioned before Rus? That doesn't make any sense. And then I said, oh, it must be because ORPA married the older son and Rus married the younger son, and that's why it made sense. So we go to the next pasuk and it tells me the two sons, Machlon and Kilyon. So of course your assumption, and if you ask a lot of people, they do think this is true. ORPA must have married Machlon and Rus married Kilyon. But we know that's not true because in Rus Perek Dal, which is the third pasuk I gave you in source 21, it specifically tells me that Rus was the wife of Machlon. So if it's Machlon and Kilyon, don't you think it should have been Rus and then ORPA? Why is ORPA's name coming first? So you might say simple, ORPA's older than Rus. Maybe so. However, in Tanakh, we normally question this when there's an order of names. We question, is it age order or is it significance order? This comes up in the psukim about Avraham. If you look at source 22, Ela Todos Terach, Terach had three sons, Avram, Nahor, and Haran. And the Gemara asks the question, is Avram the oldest? And the Gemara first says, maybe he is, because he's listed first. But then the Gemara seems to conclude, no, he's the youngest. But he was the most important, so that's why he's listed first. The Gemara then continues to ask the same question about Shem, Ham, and Yafet, and comes to the same conclusion, Shem is not the oldest, Yafet is the oldest, but Derech Chachmatam Kachashiv Lahu, Shem was more important. Hachinami, just like in the case of Aram, so too in the case of Shem, Derech Chachmatam Kachashiv Lahu, we're putting them in order of importance. And that happens a lot. If you look at the next pasuk I gave you, Yitzchak, Yitzchak is listed before Yishmael, though Yishmael is for sure older. In the psukim about the bracha to Ephraim and Menashe, right, Hamalach HaGoel, Ephraim comes before Menashe. So I start to question, if it's normally or very often the more significant person is listed first, then why does ORPA's name come before Rus? Not only that, the second thing I question, which we talked about last week, but for those of you who are not there, if I look at source 23, so many times Naomi says, please go home. Four times, please go home, please go home, please go home, which made me start to question, which is, as we discussed last week, maybe Naomi really wanted both of them to go home. And therefore, ORPA was doing the right thing. ORPA was listening to Naomi. She did what she was supposed to do. And you know what? Source 24, that's exactly how the Dot Mikra reads our pasuk. That's really the pshat. When ORPA kisses her mother-in-law goodbye, Nishika Shaprita, she's saying goodbye, Shekibla, it's different Naomi. She said, okay, I hear you, Naomi. You want me to go home? I'll do it. Rus is the one who doesn't listen. About Rus Lina good. Rus was going against Naomi. And as we discussed last week, Rus joining Naomi back to Eretz Yisrael actually hurts Naomi quite a bit. It alienates her from everyone in her shevet. It's proof of the sins of her family, of everything that they did. Look, I can't say that we didn't go to the land of Moab and intermarry into Moab when I have a Moabite daughter-in-law hanging out with me. She couldn't hide from her past. Rus was the one who kind of didn't allow Naomi to return in a very easy way. As we discussed last week, helped Naomi to return in a tshuva way. But originally, it sounded like ORPA did the exact right thing. Rus is the one who kind of made it more difficult for Naomi. So if that's true, I don't know why we have to villainize ORPA at all. So I want to give a different idea. Maybe the reason why Chazal makes ORPA look so bad is not because ORPA herself did anything within the psukim to be bad, but rather it's because it's trying to hide what I might have noticed in the psukim about Rus, or what I might have misunderstood in the psukim about Rus. Meaning, if I reason maybe why Chazal builds up that ORPA is so anti-tznias, is because if I look at the psukim closely, I might have thought that about Rus. What do I mean? Let's go to the story of Rus herself. Source 25, I mentioned this before. Boaz says to his men, Lemi Hanara Zot, who is this girl? Now I know that I said before that Chazal tells us, no, don't think of anything. It's because she was so sneeze. But if you just read that in a pasuk, you'd say, why is he noticing her? Clearly, he's noticing her not for being modest. He's noticing her for doing something that attracted her attention. And that's why the Gemara has to ask, right? It seems so weird. It seems something negative is going on that he would ask about about her, and she would attract his attention. But let's look even closer at the psukim. Look at source 26 with me. When Boaz is talking to Ruth, and he's saying to her, stay in my fields and I'll feed you. The language he uses is, and look what I bolded, v'chotid b'kin im narotai. You should stick with narotai, my girl attendants, right? The girls that are hanging out in my field, the girls that work for me. Now, when Ruth goes home to tell her mother-in-law everything that happened that day, she says, Pasuk Chaf Aleph now, ki amari lai im ha-na'arim asher litid b'kin. He told me to hang out with the guys. I should hang out with the guys. Look at the Malbim who picks up on the difference between the feminine form and the masculine form. Source 27. Ki amari la im hanarin asher litibikin. She thought he said, hang out with my guys. She didn't see the difference of what he was saying. But emet hu amar la, v'kotibikun in our tie. He was really saying with her, no, 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 don't hang out with the guys. Hang out with the girls. Rak basher hi hatamu aviyah. She was from Moab. Misham ein mitracha kiminarim. And their values are different. She used to hang out with guys all the time. She did not have the tzniyas values that we have. V'lo havina l'tayek b'tvarav. So she didn't get it when he said, hang out with the girls. She didn't get that that's what he was trying to say. Stay away from the guys. V'chashva shakam natoshi tibakan anashav. Shenarim hayu ikaretzla. V'shachashva shachamim misalto. She thought, oh, he was saying, hang out with the guys. The guys were around her all the time. She thought maybe she'd marry one of them, you know, so it's a good idea for her to hang out with the guys. And he's saying, duh-uh, stay away from the guys. Hang out with the girls. Comes along the pasuk. Now look at the language again. After Ruth says this to Naomi, look what Naomi says back to her, source 28. No, no, no. Ki tetzi en narotav. Hang out with the girls. Don't hang out with the guys. Ibn Ezra picks up on it. Narotav. Veloim na'arav. She's rebuking her. No, no, no. You misunderstood. Don't hang out with the guys. Hang out with the girls. Says Malbim picks up on this as well. Aval Naomi havina b'sichla shaloto shetidbaka na'arim. Naomi realized this is not a good idea to have Ruth hanging out with guys. Rakim na'arot hakotrot. Hang out with the girls who cut the wheat and do the stuff in the field. But Tomar, so she says to her, Tov biti kititi narotav. It'll be good for you. Hang out with the girls. Return to Lomar, Loam Nara, not with the boys. Shelo Tavoli De Chashad. We don't want you people being suspicious of you and your morals. So therefore, make sure you hang out with the girls. And then the pasa continues. Ruth finally got it. But Tidbak bin Na'arot Boaz. She hangs out with the girls. So here's where you start to see maybe Ruth was learning the values of tznius. Maybe in the story, she's not the epitome of tznius from the start. And of course, the best proof of that is source 29, which is the story we discussed also last week, when she rachatzta v'sachat v'samtas l'motayel, she washes herself, puts on oils, goes out dressed in an interesting way out to the field in the middle of the night when nobody knows to seduce Boaz to propose marriage to her. This is not a tznius story. This is one that makes you raise an eyebrow, makes you think a little bit about what's going on. She had to leave in the morning before anyone would wake up and anyone would see her. So here we have an issue. You're reading the Megillah, where clearly Ruth is the positive character. But when I start looking into the text a little bit, I start to question her tznius values. I start to question how tznius is she. So what does Chazal do to make sure that I don't come out with that conclusion? I draw this picture of Ruth as this major tznius character who bends down in such a, you know, a tzniistic way. And I make Orpah the contrast character, anti-tznius. She's the one who's the not tznius one. Don't think that of Ruth. Think that of Orpah. Let's do the same thing when it comes to Vashti. Because again, if I want to see Vashti in a positive way, I think it's very easy to see. If you look at source number 30, the pasuk says when Ahasuerus calls her to come out, she should come out b'keter malchus. There's two ways to understand that. She should come out fully clothed, but also wearing a crown. Or as the Gemara Megillah tells me, she should come out only in a crown. And if you look at the language of the Gemara Megillah, I'm about to quote you, Ahasuerus treats her in a really demeaning object type way. He's in the middle of a conversation with his buddies, the officers, and they're in a fight whose nationality has the prettiest women. And he says, and look what I underlined and bolded, Kli she'ani mishtamesh bo, the vessel that I use. That's how he refers to Vashti. It's a really, really demeaning way. She's the most beautiful. So therefore, says the Gemara, you know, they are debating, is she the most beautiful? Bring her out. She should be naked. So especially if she's being told to come out naked, but even if she's not, you could see the value of her saying, I don't want to come out and be put on display. If you look at the Mefarshim, there are some who really do try to help out Vashti quite a bit, which is against everything that we learned in elementary school. So verse 31, Ibn Ezra says, she didn't want to come out, but Avor Sechruto, she was scared. He was so drunk. She didn't know what he was going to make her do. She was scared of him. She didn't want to go out. It wasn't anything superficial or anything for herself. She was just scared of what he was going to make her do. Or source 32, Rav Moshe ben Yitzchak Chalav, who writes as follows, which I think is really beautiful. He says two ideas, but the one I want to quote is what I bolded, which is he says, let's remember in the Pasuk, it says she's hosting a party for the women. How rude would that be if in the middle of her party that she's hosting, she says to the women, sorry, gotta go. The king's calling me because lo shalach hamelch rak ba'avura levada. He wasn't inviting all the women. He was only inviting her. So she says no, because that would be rude. She's got a whole room of women. She's got a whole party of her own. How rude that would that be for her to say yes and go to see the king. But then there are those who bring out in her very positive traits. Source 33, Hinei Vashi, Rabbeinu Bechai writes, Hinei Vashi Hamalka Itam Mam Lechad Acheret Shederach Hanesh Nistater. She was from a different kingdom. Her values were to hide, not to go out and publicize in such a negative way. Or the Rikra who writes, or quotes about her, the Pasuk, Kol Kvoda Bat Melech Pnima, which is the Pasuk about the kavod of a woman, of a princess is on the inside. That's the Pasuk we quote all the time when we're talking about tznius, right? One is supposed to be tznius, and that's the pasuk we quote. He's quoting it about Vashti, which is so fabulous. Not only that, source 34, when no longer Achashverosh is drunk, right? When all of a sudden everything, actually before then, source 34, we see very, very clearly that she is respected by the people. Because what are we so worried about? We're so worried that if people find out, ki yetzei davar hamalka al kol anashim lavzot ba'alehem b'enehem, all the women are going to, you know, reject their husbands and not listen to their husbands. Says the Ram Chalav again, ki kol isha taseh kamoha. Vashti was a role model. Women did what Vashti did. This is not a negative character. This is probably a very positive character, a role model to people. So she said, I can't go out. This would be something that people would learn from me. And therefore, that's why they were so worried that when she said no, people would learn from her about that as well. Source 35, however, we see even within the king himself, he realizes he overstepped. He realizes that Vashti did not deserve the punishment that she got. If you see in the psukim by the Megillah, when he was no longer drunk and the anger was gone, he remembers Vashti and he remembers what he did to her. Look at Dot Mikra source 36. It was the anger. It was the wine. That's what made him do it. Where I bolded, on Shahaya Chamor Midai, he realizes he punished her way too harshly. He remembers how much he loves her. And he felt guilty, felt bad. He didn't mean to have such a terrible ending to the story. But so much more so, the Rabag, Vahaya Doeg Al Shanahaga, Ki Asher Asta, Lohaya Ba'ofen Shiabra Uli Gzora, Lehamash Nigzar. He realizes he messed up. She didn't deserve it. Look at the end. Ki Astaza Litznias. Vashti did it. So maybe Vashti didn't do the wrong thing. Maybe she did the right thing. And you have to think about it. Vashti clearly didn't think that when she said no, she was going to get murdered, right? That's not what she thought was going to happen. Maybe she thought she would teach Achashverosh a lesson. This is not the way to treat me. This is not the way to treat women in general. It obviously did not go her way. But therefore, why is it that Chazal wants to make her into this very, very negative character where I could actually see very positive things from Vashti? And maybe it's again, so I forget about something negative that I might have seen in Esther. Meaning, if I make the person who says no to Achashverosh not evil, then all of a sudden I start to question the person who says yes to Achashverosh. If I make Vashti evil, who says no to Achashverosh, then Esther, who says yes and does everything that he wants, is much more positive. But if I make Vashti not so evil, then I start to question, why was it okay that Esther was with Achashverosh? Why was it okay that she sleeps with a non-Jewish king? Why was it okay everything that she does? And this is something that bothers Chazal tremendously, and they really do try to deal with it. Source 37, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, how could Esther have done this before, Hesia in public, be with the king. So they come up with an answer. Esther Karka, Olam Haita, she was very passive. She didn't want to do it. It was forced upon her and therefore was okay. The Gemara in Megillah, which I find so, so interesting, for time purposes, I'm just going to summarize, brings out all these mitzvos that Esther did. Oh, don't worry, she kept Nida. Oh, don't worry, she kept Mikvah. Oh, don't worry, she kept Shabbos. Oh, don't worry, she kept Kashrus, comparing her to Daniel. It's like they're seeing that you could come out of the story of Megillah's Esther and question the heroine. So we have to build her up into this something that's very, very positive. She kept mitzvahs while she was there. Everything was done for the right reasons. But in order to make that stronger, we have to make the person who is her opposite into something very, very evil. But therefore, maybe I could take a step back and say there's two ways to look at Vashti and two ways to look at Orpah. I could look at them as evil through the eyes of Chazal. Certainly I can. But maybe I could look at them in this more pshat, not as negative way. I could look at them as actually not negative characters. And if that's true, I can actually change the ending to their story. Maybe Orpah goes home, marries a nice man, has a very nice family, and has a very good ending. That is possible. Also, it is possible that Vashti wasn't killed. Look at the story again, source 38. All it says about Vashti, asher lo tavo Vashti lefnei ha-melech ha-chashverosh, she won't come anymore in front of the king. So I know Rashi quoting Chazal, lakach nahargah, she's murdered, right? But if I look at many of the other mefarshim, including source 39, the Rashbam, yigarshenu mebeito, he just kicked her out of the palace, that's it. She could have had a life of her own. She could have remarried somebody else and had a different life. It's not 100% clear from Megillas Esther that Vashti is killed. She's just not allowed back to be with Ahasuerus, and of course, how could he bring her back after kicking her out? And therefore, there's a different way to look at Orpah and Vashti. It could be they're not so evil, and it could be their endings is not so bad. It could be maybe they did have a happy ending to their story. But therefore, I have to ask the question, which is, if they're not so bad, why do we need them, right? Why are they in the Megillah itself? What is their goal within the story? So if I go back to the story of Megillas Rus and Orpah, I understand that there's actually a reason why I need the Orpah character. Because if I think about it for a minute, the Megillah could have just gotten rid of Orpah. I could have said there were two sons, they married two women, or not even care about the second son marrying another woman. And all I care about is the fact that Naomi is left with Rus. Orpah didn't even have to be mentioned. But the reason why Orpah's there could be to contrast Rus and therefore be the negative to her, part of the yin to the yang. Or it could just be for a different reason. The normal to the extraordinary, not the evil to the good, but the normal to the extraordinary, meaning Orpah doesn't have to be bad, but Orpah's there to contrast Rus, that Rus did something that was so amazing, so extraordinary, to leave her family behind, have no money, and follow Naomi, and Orpah just did what was normal, which is go back to her life and start it anew. It reminds me of characters in Tanakh like Nahor and Terach. Ahram leaves them behind. Do we make them into villains? Do we say they're terrible people? Or do we just say they're the ones who stayed behind? They're the normal that we compare Ahram to, Ahram doing the extraordinary. Sometimes I need the normal to be able to recognize the extraordinary. Or maybe I could say Orpah is the reason why Rus stays. Meaning sometimes it could be they were playing this game. No, we'll stay. No, we'll stay. Looking to see who's the one that's going to leave first. And only because Orpah got up and said, okay, I'm leaving, Rus said, well, then I can't leave Naomi by myself. And therefore I stayed. It could be I need the Orpah because she's the one that caused Rus to say. If you look better at the story, because to me, the Orpah and the Rus relationship is very similar to the Ploni Almoni Boaz relationship. And Boaz even says it to Rus, I'll marry you if Ploni Almoni says no. But if Ploni Almoni says yes, he'll marry you. So it's kind of like I needed Ploni because by Ploni Almoni saying no, it pushes Boaz to do the extraordinary and marry Rus. So to hear by Orpah leaving, that's when Rus makes her big statement, your nation is my nation, your God is my God. Not before, it's only when Orpah leaves that causes Rus to step over to do the extraordinary. I'd like to say the same thing about Vashti. It's possible I needed Vashti because again, I could have taken out Vashti. I could have just said there was a king, he killed his wife and now he needs a new wife. What do I need to know that he called her to be a spectacle and she said, now what do I need that whole piece of the Megillah? Because I think it's setting the stage for understanding Esther. It's understanding something that I really need to know to understand how extraordinary Esther was. I want to give a fascinating parallel before I play this out, which is in Source 40. There's a story that actually my daughter Nava pointed out to me, which I thought was incredible parallel to ours, which pointed out as follows. There were two officers, the Sar HaOfim and the Sar HaMashkim, the butler and the baker, in the time of Paro, and both of them do something bad to Paro, and Paro throws them into jail, and they encounter Yosef, and that's why we care about them very much. However, at some point, there is a party. If you look at source number 40, we're presented as two equal people, right? The Sar HaMashkim and Sar HaOfim. And then there's Paro makes a party for all of his avadim, reminding me of Ahasuerus. And somehow at this party, one of them is murdered and the other one gets his high position once again. It's kind of these two characters that to some extent are pretty equal. They both did something wrong. The text doesn't tell us exactly what they did. And they have opposite results. One gets elevated back to power and ends up telling Paro about Yosef. And the other one is murdered and we don't know why. Now I could do what Chazal does to Vashti and Esther as well and make Sar HaOfim into this evil guy who on purpose put a rock in the bread versus the butler who was innocent and the fly flew in. Or I could say this is a story of two officers who really both did probably something very, very similar, but somehow in the story, their results are just completely opposite. One is murdered and one isn't, and we don't really know why. If you look at Source 41, when the Sar HaMashkim is reminding Paro of the story that occurred to tell him about Yosef, the way he talks about himself and the Sar HaOfim is mamish like as equals, like we are two the same. If you look at the story, just where I bolded, by Dabar Sar HaMashkim al Paro, he talks to Paro and he says, I don't want to mention this terrible thing that happened in my past. You got mad al Avadab, putting us both together, to your two servants. You threw us both in jail. Who? Oti, that's Sar HaOfim. Both of us the same, exactly what you did to both of us. Then both of us dreamt a dream that night. Who? Pasuk Yud-Aleph, Ani v'hu, both of us. We both had this terrible dream. And therefore with us, Pasuk Yud-Bet, was this guy, right? This guy by the name of Yosef, and we both did the same thing. We told him our dreams. And what did he do? He interpreted both of our dreams. And then, of course, Pasuk Gimel, Dar Lanu Ken Haya Oti Hashiva Kanivo Totala. And he interpreted both of them in opposite ways, and the opposite things happened to both of us. To some extent, there's like a feel here of the randomness. Like Paro picked one to make the scapegoat, and therefore got over his anger, and therefore the other one could get elevated back up. We need the one in order for the other one to have the opposite result. And I wonder when it comes to Vashti and Esther, even though they don't encounter Ahasuerus at the exact same time, but I can claim about Vashti, which is she's kind of the incentive of what brings about Esther. Why was Esther chosen? Out of all of these people, why was she chosen? Maybe it's because her personality was the opposite of Vashti. Not one was good and one was bad, but Vashti was this more outgoing, disobedient type of personality. And Esther was this very quiet, very friendly, very, you know, whatever you say, I'll do, I won't tell you who I am type of thing because everything is whatever you want type personality. And maybe it's possible Ahasuerus picked Esther because she was the opposite of Vashti. Not one's good, one's bad. Just one caused the other. Vashti made problems for me, so I'm going to pick a queen that is exactly the opposite. But I think it's a little bit bigger than that, because the entire story of Purim is really quite strange. If you start from the beginning, Ahasuerus is this very outgoing king, and he has tons of parties, and everyone's allowed in his house. And then, after the Vashti story, very soon afterwards, he elevates Haman, and all of a sudden, no one's allowed in his house. If you want to talk to him, you need the scepter to be pulled out, right? It's like all of a sudden, he had a personality change. Maybe it was something about what happened with Vashti that really shook him up. Also, Bigtan and Teresh, where he sees, I can have these people that I trust that are close to me, and they can turn on me in any moment. And that's also why we see he turns on Haman too, because he has in him this idea of, if somebody starts to try to take away my power, kill them in one instant. And it's the same story. Source 42, he raises Haman up, right? He displays him to everyone, just like he displayed Vashti or wanted to display Vashti. He even gives him his ring. And then all we need is a bunch of suspicious things to happen, where all of a sudden he's like, is Haman really as loyal? Why is Haman hanging out in my palace at night? Why is he asking to dress in king's clothes and ride on my horse? Why is my queen keep inviting him to my parties, right? And then all he needs is Esther to say, Ish sarvo yev haman hara hazeh. And that's it. Pasuk chet, he accuses him. Are you attacking my queen? The next thing we know, the end of Pasuk Tet, source 42, Vayom hamelch talu alav. kill him. And if you compare the discussion or the psukim about the way Ahasuerus treats Vashti and the way he treats Haman, it's very, very similar. Look at source 43. When it comes to Vashti, we said the language, v'chamato barabo. He's so mad. His anger like boiled in him. Look at by Haman, v'melech kam v'chamato. It's the same language. His anger got so boiled within him. And just like, again, in one moment, you went from being the highest person to dead, Vashti, the queen, to dead, Haman, the second in command, to dead. So too, we have that here, kills them both or gets rid of them both. Then what happens? It all goes away. All the anger goes away. It's pasuk by Vashti, kishol chamas hamelech Achashverosh, and by Haman as well, the chamat hamelech shachach. It all went away. It's the same story. And therefore now all of a sudden I understand why Vashti is so important. She's not a bad character, but she's a fundamental character to my understanding of the story. She created this imagery in the king's head of, oh my goodness, the people that are closest to me, they can take away from my power. And I'm sensitive to the fact that anybody could come and take away my power. You say no to me, and therefore I'm going to get upset, which is what builds up in him when he starts to be suspicious of Haman, why all of a sudden he kills Haman. And now it makes perfectly clear why he picks Esther, the opposite. If you look at source 44, again, why does he pick her? She's the opposite. She's so sweet. She's so kind, even though he just stole her from her house. But not only that, source 45, why do you think he keeps offering her twice? I'll give you half my kingdom. I don't believe he was going to give her half a kingdom. That doesn't make any sense. Vashti says no, and he kills her. He's going to give half his kingdom to his new queen. I think it's a test. He's like, I want to see. Are you like her? Are you trying to take over everything from me? I'll give you half my kingdom. Oh, no, no, no. That's not what I want. I just want you to come to my party. Perfect. That's the wife I'm looking for. And look how she speaks to him. Oh my gosh, it's like the most humble way of speaking to him. If you would listen to my little request to do what I want, only because of what Vashti did to Ahasuerosh does Esther get chosen. And therefore, was Esther able to save the Jewish people? Without Vashti, I don't think there could have been an Esther. And it's possible to say without Orpah, Rus may not have stayed, and we may not have had Megillas Rus. And therefore, at the end of the day, I think it's really fascinating to take characters in Tanakh that we sometimes view in a very black and white way. And we make them, you are evil and you are good. You're the hero, you're the villain. But as we all know, in life, people are not heroes and villains. People are all shades of colors. People are complicated. And there's good and bad in so many people. And therefore, I think it's important to look at some of these characters in a new way. Obviously, it's called Megillas Rus and it's called Megillas Esther. It is not called Megillas Orpah and it's not called Megillas Vashti, because they are not the role models. At the end of the day, Rus does something extraordinary. She leaves everything behind to help Naomi and gives over the baby to Naomi and leads to David HaMelech. Esther, at the end of the day, changes the reality for the Jewish people and saves us from the decree of Haman. But Orpah, we can still understand her and look at her in a different way, either as the contrast, the evil person in the story, or just the normal person in the story. The person who does what's expected. Someone says, go home, and it's not good for you to stay. You go home. Or possibly like Vashti, who thought she was standing up to do something right, thought she was kind of making a scene in a good way, teaching Ahasuerosh a lesson, but it blew up in her face and didn't go the way that she wanted. I know I'm over. Give me 2 minutes. Last time I ended 10 minutes early, so I feel like I get an extra 2 minutes. I apologize. But I just want to bring the message home, which is as follows. If I want to take a step back, Orpah and Vashti, I could certainly look at them negative characters. They bring out the good in the Esther and the Rus character. Or maybe I could look at them, as I've just been explaining, as a piece of the puzzle. A piece of the puzzle of what they did leading to the greater good of the rest of the story. And without them, maybe the story would not have played out the way that it did. And for me, I think that's a really important lesson. And it's something really beautiful, I think, for us to take away as the series now is over, which is very, very often in life, we want to do the right thing. We try to do the right thing, but we don't get to have stories like Esther and even like Rus, where you necessarily see, oh, this one thing I did saved all the Jewish people and saved humankind or led to, you know, greatness. Sometimes we work really hard to do the right thing and we have no idea when down the road that's going to make an effect and change something and be something that is significant. Their life was a piece of the puzzle of a great picture that came about, but they didn't get to see the rest of the puzzle. They didn't get to see what their action did that caused something good. And I think that's something for us to really, really focus on. Because I think right now in this situation, and especially as Shavuos is approaching very quickly, and I think many of us are learning that Shavuos is going to be very, very different this year than it has ever been before. Maybe some people are going to be able to have a minyan. Many people are not going to have minyanim. If you have a minyan, it's not going to be in a shul. It's going to be very different. We're not going to be able to sit and learn Torah all night together, you know, the way that we have in the past. But I do think that maybe we can look at it a little bit different. Instead of this being sad, to realize that this Shavuos and this experience that we're having is going to be an extremely memorable one for us, for our children, for everybody in the Jewish community. How we act and how we treat the Shavuos and how we treat this entire situation that's going on, I think is going to have a tremendous, tremendous effect on us as human beings, on our families and the relationships with our family, especially our children who are watching us at this time and seeing how we are reacting. And are we going to be sad all Shavuos, or are we going to pick ourselves up and say, let's learn some Torah together, and it's okay because in our house it's all still good, right? And how are we going to react as a community as a whole? And I think if we realize that what happens today is actually part of a bigger puzzle of this bigger picture of what is going to be the future of Am Yisrael, because this time period is going to be memorable. It's going to be something that we will always remember. I think it will help us to all be inspired this Shavuos, wherever we are, this Shavuos, whoever we are with, to really take strength in our learning of Torah and celebrate Shavuos with our families and with the community virtually or from afar. Anyway, thank you very, very much for learning with me the past 3 weeks. I wish you all a very, very meaningful Shavuos and a wonderful summer and very good health. Thank you very, very much, everyone.